We're all full of lies. Mama, we're meant for the flies. And right now they're building a coffin your size. Mama, we're all full of lies. Well, mother was the warden to my legs and to my tongue. You should have raised a baby girl. I should have been a better son. If you could count on the infection, naked, amputated ones, you should have been. I could have been a better son. And when we can real blame on us.
Chapter 16. I lay in my bed, in the dark. Every few minutes, I'd check the glowing numbers of the clock. 3:15, 3:42, 4:09. I wanted to sleep. Needed to sleep. Couldn't. Ever have one of those nights? Where you're exhausted. Where you'd pay anything just to fall asleep? But the wheels in your head just keep spinning, and spinning, and spinning? Imagined conversations. Me, talking. Explaining. Arguing. Changing the words around. Repeating them. Rehashing them. Around and around, in circles. Me talking to Jake, an imaginary Jake. Explaining, with perfect logic. Me talking to my dad, in some fictional future. Some non-existent world where things were different, and I could at last tell all the secrets I'd guarded with my life. Me talking to my mom. Raging. Explaining. Me explaining to my mom, as my mom. As my real mom, why I had to do it. Me explaining to my mom as Visser 1. Laughing, chortling, savoring my victory over her. This is how I defeated you, I crowed. This is how I saved you, I explained. No choice. No choice. I had to do it, Dad. You understand, right? What else was I going to do? Too much on the line. I had responsibilities. You know how that is, right? And besides, she was already dead to you. You'd already grieved, remember? You spent years just sitting in your chair, staring blankly, your life falling apart. See, Jake? Don't ever doubt me again. I did it, okay? I put the mission first. I saw the big picture. So just don't ever doubt me again. Because I did what had to be done. Mom, what was I supposed to do? I saw all the plays. I saw all the pieces on the chessboard. There was no solution that freed you. There were only solutions that destroyed you. I had to. How else? How else to... Die, you yerk piece of crap. Wither and die, and remember with your last dying thought. It was for her. I killed you for her. For Jake. For my dad. For... Around and around, as the hours ticked away, as exhaustion sank deep into my bones. Someday, if we won, if humanity survived, we'd be in the history books. Me, and Jake, and Rachel, and Cassie, and Tobias, and Axe. They'd be household names, like generals from World War II or the Civil War. Patton and Eisenhower, Ulysses Grant and Robert E. Lee. Kids would study us in school. Bored, probably. And then the teacher would tell the story of Marco. I'd be part of history. What I was about to do. Some kid would laugh. Some kid would say, "Cold, man. That was really cold." I had to do it, kid. It was a war. It's the whole point, you stupid, smug, smirking little jerk. Don't you get it? It was the whole point. We hurt the innocent in order to stop the evil. Innocent Hork-Bajir. Innocent Taxons. Innocent human controllers. How else to stop the Yerks? How else to win? No choice, you punk. We did what we had to do. Cold, man. The Marco dude? He was just cold. Chapter 17. The next morning, we all met at the barn. I was past tired. My butt was sore. My elbows were raw from skinning down the artificial cliff. Tobias seemed tired too. Too tired even to tease me about my encounter with the goat. Axe acted as though he had spent the night snoozing like a baby. I explained my plan to Jake and the others. We take out Visser 1. We take out Visser 3. We leave the Yerks believing they've erased the Free Hork-Bajir colony. The Free Hork-Bajir end up much safer. The Yerks end up leaderless. I avoided looking at Cassie. From Jake, there was just the briefest flicker of sadness. But Jake, too, is addicted to the bright, clear line. Rachel kept her eyes down, focusing on the dirt and hay floor. Rachel's not stupid. She knew anything she said would just make me mad. And I guess she, like all of them, was putting herself in my shoes, wondering if she could do it. If it works, we have them both, I concluded. But there's a lot to go wrong. A lot of unforeseen things that... Cassie put a hand on my arm.
Marco, you know we'll try to help your mother, in whatever way we can.
She's only one person. I shrugged off her hand and stood up. And we're supposed to be saving the world, right? It was one of the lines I'd practiced the night before. It sounded more bitter and less cool and calm and in control than I'd wanted.
Okay, Jake said.
That was it. Just okay. He didn't come out with any of the lines I'd put in his mouth in my imaginary conversations. So, we do it? I asked.
Yeah. You call the plays, Marco.
I sucked in a shaky breath.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, we want to push the timing. Don't give Visser 1 time to think about it. Keep her off balance. I know the place. I hiked near there once with my dad. I need someone to contact Eric. Eric is one of a small group of Chi. They are androids. Pacifists by programming. But working to infiltrate the Yerk ranks. Spies. The Chi passes human by the use of sophisticated holographic projections. They live human lives. Many human lives. They've been on Earth since the time of the pyramids.
I'm on it,
Tobias volunteered, flying down from his perch in the hayloft. Okay, we don't let her see us. We play arrogant Andalites the whole way. Visser 1 can't-
She's your mother, Cassie exploded. She's not Visser 1. She's your mother. Is everyone just going to let this happen?
Jake sent her a cold look.
This is not the time, Cassie.
When is going to be the time? When Marco's mind is screwed up forever by this? He's in denial. This is his mother, for God's sake.
Jake said nothing. No one said anything. Cassie's words just hung in the air.
Go on, Marco, Jake said finally.
We want her to focus on disliking Andalite arrogance, I said. She hates Andalites, so we want her to dwell on that. Maybe it will be enough to keep her from seeing the trap. As soon as we're ready, I'll email her.
Ox, do you think we could play the roles of arrogant Andalites?
Jake asked.
It will certainly require good acting skills to imbue the fundamentally humble and dispassionate Andalite character with a taint of arrogance,
he said.
Yeah, humble is the very first word that comes to my mind when I think Andalite,
Rachel said with a drawl.
I think I should do as much of it as possible,
Tobias suggested.
I spend the most time with Axe. I can do a pretty good, arrogant Andalite.
I am very close to taking offense,
Axe huffed. Okay, Tobias. But you have to allow time to get to the mountains.
I'll have a tailwind, and I go as the bird flies, not on winding mountain roads.
I went to the computer Cassie and her dad used to keep medical records. Axe, we need a secure screen name. Something not even the Yerks could trace back here. Axe worked at the computer for a few minutes, muttering about primitive human technology. Muttering in a dispassionately humble way, of course.
You may compose your message.
I typed. I hit send. I didn't think about what I was setting in motion. Okay, everyone understands what's what, right? I asked.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm out of here. I began to morph to Osprey. Moments later, I was in the air, relieved to be away from my friends. Approximately 15 minutes later, I landed in a leafy elm tree near the busy corner of Green and Spring Streets. Tobias sat on a telephone pole across the street, preening his feathers. You get Eric?
Yeah, he's on it. Think she'll show? Visser 1?
Minutes later, she drove up in a rented Audi. She slammed it into a parking space, bullying her way past a family in a Chrysler town and country. She climbed out. The driver of the van yelled something at her. She gave him a look. He decided to drive off. She wasn't in disguise anymore. She looked like my mom again. She was my mom. The olive skin. The shampoo commercial black hair. The dark eyes. Visser 1, I told myself. She stood, pretending to be fascinated by the wares displayed in the window of the Ace Hardware. You're on, Tobias, I told him. Remember, arrogant Andalite.
Visser 1, you will follow my instructions literally and immediately,
Tobias said. Her head jerked. She looked around. She eyed a blind woman's guide dog suspiciously.
You will be crossing paths with a human controller named Chapman,
Tobias said.
Chapman, she mumbled. One of Visser 3's incompetents. He would turn me in a second if it meant advancement through the ranks.
Exactly the point, Yerk. You want Visser 3. Surely you understand that we had to attract his attention. We are delivering him. Do not question me again.
My Osprey eyes could see her mouth form a string of foul words. Tobias ignored her.
Chapman's afternoon run takes him past the human business called Dunkin' Donuts. It is one street to the east. Walk there now. Make sure he sees you. Do not attempt to escape,
Tobias said.
We will protect you if necessary.
Visser 1 was standing outside Dunkin' Donuts at 1:55 p.m. At precisely 2:10 p.m., Chapman rounded the corner, dressed in a lime green and yellow jogging outfit. The Yerk and my mother's head opened her hand. Her purse dropped. Chapman, always playing the role of pillar of the community, bent to pick it up for her. He straightened and held out the purse. Visser 1 formed a smile. Then the smile froze. It was convincingly done. Chapman said nothing, but I could see the blood draining out of his cheeks. He took a step back and ran off double speed. From my next perch, on the corrugated tin roof of Fred's car wash, I saw Chapman stop at a payphone a block away and frantically punch the numbers. Visser 1 stood fuming. She looked around again, trying to spot us. But there were pigeons and dogs, and we could have been anywhere.
Walk north one street,
Tobias said.
Embark on the large vehicle that stops at the next corner. Disembark at JCPenney.
It's called a bus, you indolent fool, she muttered in response.
I happened to hear as she passed below me. Tobias's act was working. Good job, Tobias. You do a good Andalite. When the bus comes, you fly. I'll ride.
You're the boss,
Tobias said. 2 minutes later, a bus pulled up against the painted yellow curb.
Embark,
Tobias snapped. Embark? I asked Tobias.
I thought it sounded like something Axe would think was right.
My mother got on the bus. I swooped down off the car wash and landed, scrabbling, on the hot metal roof of the bus. There was nothing to hold on to, but a couple of tiny rivets had popped out, and I seized a precarious hold by prying my talon tips into the holes. Not my favorite way to travel. The bus rumbled back into traffic and began the 5-minute ride to the mall. Fortunately, it never got over 10 or 15 miles an hour. Ducking my head down and streamlining my body, I could resist the wind. I could have kept pace from the air, which would have been a lot more comfortable. 2 blocks away from the stop in front of JCPenney, I lifted off. I flop for altitude. An Osprey near the ground sticks out. I scanned the area for familiar faces. I spotted the hard stare of a Peregrine Falcon's eyes. Jake was perched atop a bank out on the periphery of the mall parking lot. We're on schedule at this end, I reported.
You're sure Chapman saw her?
Oh yeah, he saw her. He nearly wet himself.
Good. Were you followed?
We can only hope.
Any sign of her own forces?
We haven't exactly had time to watch everyone, I said. How about the others?
Rachel and Cassie are in place. Axe should be getting to the mountain soon. I think we can be confident that Eric will be there, on schedule.
Okay. Tobias? I called.
Yeah, I'm above you.
You can go, dude. We got it here.
I've got it here.
Jake corrected.
Don't forget, Marco. You stay quiet.
I know. I said, a little exasperated. Don't let her hear my voice. Not even the one in my head.
That's right. The clothes are in the dumpster.
You had to stash them in a dumpster?
Hey, you wanted clothes, right?
I flew to the dumpster. It wasn't bad. I think it was all boxes and stuff from the Gap and Old Navy. Much better than a restaurant dumpster. I demorphed in the dumpster and pulled on the clothes Jake had stashed there. Jake landed beside me.
Fly, right?
That's the plan. Jake quickly demorphed, then morphed to fly. He buzzed his wings and took a few quick turns, then landed on my shoulder. I climbed out, and we hurried around to a side entrance of the JCPenney. Visitor 1 had walked from the bus stop through the door. She waited impatiently for instructions. She pretended to shop, tugging fitfully at some kid-sized Michael Jordan jerseys. My size, maybe. Was she thinking about the son her host body had once had? No, not likely. She was thinking about the fact that controllers were everywhere. Thinking about the fact that by now, Vista 3 had a tail on her, was watching her, tightening his ring around her. I lurked behind a tall potted plant. Okay, directly ahead, I whispered to Jake. There's a TV screen hanging down from above. Do you see it? Flies are very weak at seeing distances. It's why I had to be human, so I could act as an air traffic controller and direct Jake toward his target.
I see bright swirling lights, above and straight ahead.
That's the TV. Okay, she's in almost a straight line from here to the TV, just a shade to the right. Jake took off. I lost sight of him immediately, of course. Hard to see a fly against the confused backdrop of visuals.
I'm on her,
Jake announced a few moments later.
Beginning contact.
Seconds later, I heard Jake's thought-speak voice, sounding very different, and I saw my mother's head snap up.
Go to the back of this establishment, Yerk,
Jake instructed.
Purchase a neck protection garment. Also, artificial skin designed for the protection of hands.
Scarf and gloves. I almost laughed. It was classic axe ease. Verser 1 must have said something harsh. The next thing I heard was Jake saying,
Do not be foolish, Yerk. We are using this process to equip you as necessary, and to discover any pursuit. For your information, we have spotted 4 human controllers who are already watching you.
A lie, of course. But Visser 1's head snapped around before she got control of herself.
We are creating a trail, Yerk,
Jake said with utter smugness.
And you are being watched, so do not attempt anything stupid. One wrong move and we'll kill you now, and worry about Visser 3 later.
Very nice, I complimented Jake.
Next stop, the camping store,
Jake said.
Let's see how well she holds up. She's volatile. She could go off.
No, she'll stick with the plan, I said. I understood Visser 1. She sold the bright, clear line too. Problem was, only one of us could be right. Chapter 18. Rachel, her hair in 2 dorky braids, and a goofy fisherman's cap low on her head, was staked out in shoes and handbags. I was a few aisles over, in hosiery. I looked slightly out of place. I could only hope that no one from school would spot me as I perused the racks of sheer-to-waist, sandal-foot taupe pantyhose. That's the kind of thing that stays with you in school. Visser 1 stormed into the scarves, gloves, and hats department. She grabbed a gray wool scarf off a shelf, snatched a pair of woefully inadequate fancy leather gloves, and dutifully purchased them with a no-doubt fake credit card. Then, she started to walk back toward the exit leading into the mall. All according to plan. Then...
Excuse me, ma'am? Could you follow me, please?
A security guard. Plainclothes. The kind of guy who always seems to end up following me through a store. Rachel shot a glance at me. She raised a questioning eyebrow. I moved closer, carefully keeping out of Visser One's line of sight.
Follow you?
My mother's voice snapped.
Why?
Just follow me, ma'am. I need to ask you some questions.
The Visser's hand drifted down toward her purse. The guard saw the movement, too.
You are under arrest for stealing that scarf. I bought this scarf,
the Visser said tightly.
I have the receipt.
The guard laughed nervously. He glanced around like he was looking for help, but he sounded determined enough.
If you reach into your purse for the Dracon beam, I'm sure you have. I will kill you right here and now, traitor.
Visser One's hand was in the purse. The guard reached inside his coat. We were about 2 seconds away from a shootout in our crowded store. Suddenly, Rachel was behind me.
Hide, you idiot! You're gaping like a tourist! I have this,
Rachel whispered. She was right. I was standing in the open, drawn toward her without realizing it. If my mother had turned. I ducked behind a display of long velvet shawls. Rachel moved fast. She locked her hand around Visser One's wrist. Then, in a loud, nasal whine, she said,
I saw you buy that scarf.
The guard hesitated. Visser One stiffened. She stared closely at Rachel, but Rachel had turned away.
This woman's being arrested, and she didn't do anything. Lady, you sold her that scarf, and now she's being arrested. What kind of store is this?
One thing we couldn't do, leave any controller behind who could recognize us and wonder. Rachel was avoiding eye contact, hiding beneath her hat and bad hair, hiding behind a false voice. I hoped it was enough.
It's ridiculous! This woman is being arrested and she paid for it! She paid too much, if you ask me, for that fabric. It's not cashmere, after all.
I smothered a grin. It was working. A crowd was gathering. The saleswoman was in it now, agreeing that Visser One had paid for the scarf.
What is going on?
Jake wondered, confused. It's hard to follow conversations when you're a fly. But of course, we couldn't answer him. Rachel moved out of the crowd and grabbed my arm.
Let's get out of here.
No one is watching
security cameras,
she hissed. She nodded toward the ceiling. I saw the dark glass blister that hit a camera. Oh. I followed Rachel toward our dressing room. My first and probably last visit to a woman's dressing room. Rachel led me out a back door into a maintenance hallway, all cinder block and steel doors. We reached the camping store before Visser One and Jake did. Cassie was waiting there. She ran interference as Visser One was put through her paces, buying climbing rope and pitons. Rachel and I drifted around, pretending to shop. We were watching the others in the store, watching those who were watching Visser One. Jake had bluffed earlier, claiming we'd spotted 4 human controllers on Visser One's tail. That was no longer a lie. Within minutes, we were confident that the true number was not 4, but 5.
You wanted to make sure she was followed, Marco. She's being followed. And now we are setting up one heck of a shootout at the OK Corral,
Rachel whispered.
You'd sure better know what you're doing.
Yeah, I'd better.
Hello, Phantomorphs, and thank you for listening to another episode of Audiomorphs, the Animorphs Auditory Experience. As always, this is your host, Daniel. Thank you all for listening to another week. This is the week that I, for the first time, have experienced my own KASU. I think that's how you would pronounce it. K-A-S-U. It's an acronym that stands for Catherine Applegate Screw-Up. I know there are lists compiled by fans that have been around for longer than I've been doing this, documenting all the like little continuity errors when Applegate was still sort of figuring out the rules of the world. And sometimes, you know, made a choice that later on she retcons and goes back on to make other things work. Book 30 is a little late for it, but I don't know what happened here, but it happened and I noticed it for the first time. The other ones my brain just sort of lost over and I don't remember after catching them. This time, definitely, Marco speaks to Jake several times in thought speak, even though Marco's not in Morph right now. That's very strange. And again, really late for that to be happening. I don't know what happened. But these things do happen, especially at the rate these books were being published. You know, we allow some grace. And now I got some messages to read. The first couple are coming in on the Tumblr. That's audiomorphscast.tumblr.com. The first one's from Briar Moss, who says, the boys breaking Cassie's window at midnight to find out that a mountain goat is good at climbing mountains is... Well, they sure are middle school boys. So true. And then, also, I've been listening to the official audiobooks, and I just really appreciate how inhuman you make Axe sound. In the official ones, he just sounds like a guy, not an alien. Thank you so much for writing in, Briar, and thank you for enjoying my Axe voice. That one, more so than any other one, was born out of necessity, because I don't actually have a great vocal range, and I am not, in my opinion, especially good at coming up with, like, a character voice in that way. And so by the time I got to Axe, I had already kind of tapped out sort of my full repertoire, right? I went kind of nasally for Marco, I went kind of gravelly for Tobias, I went sort of soft for Rachel, I went high for Cassie, and I went low for Jake, and that's, like, sort of all my tricks for not having any vocal training. That's sort of all I could do. And so it was like, oh, dang, I still need to come up with one for Axe, and I need to come up with one that not only, because Axe is a main character and narrates books, I need to come up with one that I can maintain for an extended period of time without destroying my vocal cords. I need one that isn't elaborate. I can't really be throwing, like, filters and stuff onto it because he narrates, you know, whole books, and I can't be sitting there in the editing hitting whole, you know, chapters with a vocal filter. That's going to be exhausting for me. And it's got to be something that you, the listener, can hear, and it's, you can both understand what's being said, and it isn't, like, annoying to hear for so long. Like, the Elemist, I know there's an Elemist Chronicles, and that I'm gonna have to figure that out, but, like, Elemist within the other books just shows up and says, you know, 2 to 5 lines, usually. So I can mess around, and, because he's, like a godlike character, I can sort of add some vocal effects there. Sometimes he's a little hard to, I know there are some that I've gone way overboard on, I acknowledge, but, you know, he can be a little hard to understand, he can be a little overwhelming to hear, because that's part of the character in the moment, and I feel okay with that, because it's 1 or 2 lines. But, like, for example, when I get to the Elemist Chronicles way at the end there, I'm gonna have to figure out a pared-down version of that in order to make it both listenable for you and feasible for me to create. And that's a little insight into how I came up with Axe. And my justification was that, you know, he's an alien, so if we change the cadence a little bit, that, you know, sure, aliens speak differently from humans. That's fine. But it was mostly necessity, but I'm glad you enjoyed it. I have had people not enjoy it, which is totally their right. I've had someone call it William Shatner-esque, which I don't disagree with. But it's what we've settled into and what I've committed to, and I'm glad some of you like it. Works out, right? Thank you so much for writing in, Briar. I also have a message from Edney, who writes in saying, "Hey, I'm on episode 335, that's from last week. Great episode. I won't lie, I got scared and looked up his mom, so I won't freak out. And then, I don't think this is spoilers because the series is older than me by a few years. This is my first time reading. And then I will omit the spoilers, that they wrote here, because some people are touchy about that. Me personally, I think that a good story can weather spoilers and still be impactful and effective, because that's what good writing does, in my opinion. But I will respect sort of our current spoiler culture that doesn't like having those moments revealed prematurely. So I won't just say it out loud, but Edney then goes in about the spoilers and says, "It's also sad, though. Thank you for writing it, Andy. I'm glad you're enjoying it. I'm glad that I'm your first time experiencing this Animorph story. That's very cool for me. Yeah, thank you for being around and enjoying it and being so invested that you had to look up to make sure that you don't lose your mind in anticipation. thank you so much. I also have a couple of messages coming in through the Gmail. That's audiomorphscast@gmail.com. First one's from Timothy, or Tim, who says, "Hey Dan, Tim again. It's been a while since my last message, though I just heard them this week," and then like a crying laughing emoji. "I just finished episode 328, I think. The one where you got political at the end notes." Then another crying laughing emoji. "This message is semi-political, so if you don't want to read that part on the air, I understand. I'll summarize, but basically, Tim feels that we share similar political positions, and that's something that he's grateful for, especially since he has been boycotting companies that are materially supporting Israel, and he would have boycotted me had I been pro-Israel, and so he's glad he doesn't have to. And I'm glad you don't have to either, Tim. Glad to have you aboard. And then the second half is non-political and Animorphs-related, haha. Spotify does this weird glitch sometimes if I go straight from listening to music to your podcast, where it doesn't turn shuffle off, and since podcasts don't have that button, I have to force quit. But sometimes I get a minute or two into the wrong episode before I realize. After that last episode in Megamorphs, it went all the way back to the moment where they were talking to Eric and his dad for the first time, and Marco noted why Eric wanted to remove his pacifism, and I thought they had met Eric in the past. So Eric didn't know them yet, and was like wanting to contribute to the destruction of Nazis, and couldn't, and then realized what was happening and got to the right episode. But it made me think, that really is a missed opportunity in these time travel books. They could have met up with Chi, who didn't know them. Obviously, it would have to be some crazy luck and clever writing because the Chi were good at hiding, but I think it could be done well. Anyway, long message, sorry, thanks again for keeping up with this. I still don't have a cool sign-off. Tim. Thank you so much for writing in, Tim. Actually, that is a really good idea. I agree. They should have met Achi while time traveling, because that would have been... They should have met Eric while time traveling. I'll even go that far. Especially because we remember his dad, Eric's quote-unquote dad, who's currently playing Eric's dad, was a surgeon in France in... I think he said the... Oh, I don't remember if it was medieval or Victorian, but back when surgery was bad. That was in the book where Cassie had to perform brain surgery, and Eric was like, can't help you. Also weird that Eric's dad was allowed to be a surgeon in France in whichever time period he mentioned, where like medicine was quite brutal. Strange, no? That feels like that'd be a violation of their pacifism code, but their pacifism code's always been a little... wishy-washy on what exactly constitutes. That is probably one of the weaker areas of consistency in the series, is the Chi pacifism, which I understand. It's a real thin line between allowing them to be useful plot devices to get a story going or pull the Animorphs out of a bad situation, while also not allowing them to just win the war because they're these super mega androids that are, like, unstoppable. But yeah, I definitely think they should have met one of the Chi, probably Eric, in their time travels. I think they could have thought they saw a guard by themselves, and when they went to go knock him out, you know, it was actually a Chi. I don't know. You know, it could have been done, and I think it would have been a lot of fun. You're right. Thanks so much for writing in, Tim. And now for something that I'm not thankful for receiving. Zionist Sean wrote back in, and I'm not gonna dignify all of this screed he's written to me with reading it out loud in these end show notes. He's just still insisting that Israeli propaganda is real and everything else is propaganda from Hamas, which is laughable at this point. And then he takes some dumb centrist point where he's like, both sides are bad. They both kill people. It's just a matter that Israel's more effective, and somehow that's not something that you should be worried about. And then he tries to, like, what about Ukraine or something? It's a whole mess. Sean, stop listening to this podcast. I'm telling you, specifically you, Sean, who keeps writing in, I don't want you listening to my podcast. Get out. I'm not gonna entertain this anymore. Get out, get a life, get better soon, please. If you'd like to write in and you aren't a Zionist Sean, you can do that through a variety of ways. I've mentioned two: the Tumblr, audiomorphscast.tumblr.com, and the Gmail, audiomorphscast@gmail.com. And of course, my website, theapocalypse.com. That's the apocalypse, like apocalypse with a D in the middle. I have a, like, answer form there or something. You can also tweet at me at audiomorphs, and that's where you should check if I'm ever late uploading. I will try to have a reason up there. I think that's all I got for you guys this week. Thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next week. My name is Daniel, and I believe one day the Andalites will come. Until then, we fight.